What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
You're listening to Footy Prime, the podcast, with Craig Forrest, James Sharman, and the mighty Danny Diccio. Today, we welcome Thomas Rongan and Brendan Dunlop. For Dan Wonger and myself, Jeff Cole, let's have it.
Hello, welcome to Footy Prime, and to hell with those names you mentioned. More importantly, it's nice to get out. This is our first live show on location for a while, live from Trinity Bellwoods Park. It's quite the party out there today, let me tell you, and we're having a great time. We're oiled up. We are in the micro-kinis, Danny especially, and we're enjoying the summer. Welcome, everyone. Deitch, Craig, Wonger. We'll get to those other two names you mentioned shortly, but what a weekend it's been so far. Football's back somewhat. The sun is out. Are you feeling positive once again, fellas?
Feeling pretty good, for sure. It makes a big difference, the weather, but the social distancing is getting a little relaxed around the Toronto area, that's for sure.
Sadly. Deitch, how many people right now are within 2 meters of you?
Because I'm in my bedroom, which is the quietest place in the house, it's pretty good. But if I walk outside my door, there's at least 16 people within 2 meters of me.
It's like a honeybee's nest in your place, right? You walk out and it's just being swarmed by thousands of people. By the way, Craig, are you growing a beard? Is this what I'm seeing here?
Me?
Yeah.
Well,
looks like it.
I don't really know what I'm doing, to be honest with you.
Just laziness, giving up?
No, I'm not giving up. I'm just trying to find something I like, and I haven't found it yet.
Are you talking about your beard and facial hair, or?
Well, you know, all the above, brother.
Isn't that an old Simple Minds song or a U2 song? I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Yeah, pretty much, or I can't win for losing.
Oh, that's all right, Craig. You'll be okay. You know who's winning right now? Who is winning is Alfonso Davies. Watching Germany once again this weekend. And
I gotta go. There's a bylaw officer coming to give me a ticket in the park here, so I gotta go. Yes, officer, I'll be right there. No, not the baton.
It's because of that big blue dildo you talk into. He's thinking that's like a Smurf or something beside you. It's actually your microphone, but good luck to you there, pal. But yeah, so it's winning right now. It's Fonzie, right? So watching the game this weekend, and we still that goal that Alfonso scores, and Twitter blows up. But, all right, if ever there's a goal that looks like a training ground goal, it's got to be that one, right? I mean, give the guy credit, absolute credit. Well done, Fonzie, you scored a goal. But, my God, I don't know what the defense was thinking. It wasn't a thing of beauty, was it?
Well, the defender played a 1-2 with him.
What's that?
Thomas is redecorating his...
I was going to say, what you hear there is Thomas Rongan. I don't know what he's doing right now, but he's making a hell of a lot of noise. What is he doing? You look like I need a beer. Crack a beer there, TR.
Great.
We'll get into you shortly.
Look at this. And it has an opener in it as well, a beer opener in the inside.
All right, so TR has got a T-shirt with a beer opener sewn into it.
Wow, he had it on about 30 seconds ago. I don't know
what's changed.
I went to the, doing the same thing over and over again, which is the definition of insanity. That's my boy right here.
Albert Einstein. So listen, I guess we've brought in TR earlier than we thought, but I've worked with TR and so have you guys for, you know, a number of years ago now already, but a lot. And much like Brian Budd, you have a plan, and it gets thrown out the window straight away. So welcome, TR. If you don't know who TR is, I don't know where you've been, but Thomas Rongan of BN Sports, CBS Sports, former MLS head coach, former MLS champion, coach of the year, the star of the brilliant documentary Next Goal Wins, soon to be, by the way, an actual motion picture. We'll get to that shortly as well. He was the man that Johan Cruyff based his game around. That's the truth. We'll get to that. And more importantly, as mentioned, a former colleague of ours, TR, welcome to Footy Prime, mate. How you doing?
I love it. Thank you. It's great to hear Canadian accents, fake Canadian accents like Deitch. Dunlop does better Ukrainian Polish accents than he actually speaks English. So I'm flattered. Thanks for being on, guys.
Thomas, what accent is yours now? I don't know.
I don't know either. I just did an interview in Dutch, and the guy goes, "Are you fucking kidding me? You can't speak Dutch anymore." So no, yeah, it's been interesting.
We're also welcoming, as you heard there, Brendan Dunlop back to the show. Hey, Dunlop, what's up, pal?
What's up, boys? How are you? It's great to see you. And God,
you
Ron,
look like, sorry, mate, sorry to interrupt you, but you know, on this beard theme, man, you are rocking something pretty special right now.
It's pretty intense, yeah. That, you know, for my whole life, I've had to explain that I'm half Portuguese, but I feel like now I don't have to anymore. People are like, "Oh yeah, totally, I get it."
Is it the left or the right half?
Well, it's definitely the lower half of the face right now. It's just like I shaved on Thursday, guys. This has not been a whole quarantine thing.
It's not quite as groomed as Danny's beard, but it's pretty damn good, man. I'm impressed. You grow a fine beard. All right, so yeah, back to you, mate. Listen, let's get the COVID question out of the way. We have to address it at some point, right, with every guest we have here. It's kind of getting a bit boring, but how are you enjoying COVID-19?
This sounds crazy, maybe. That's why I'm wearing this T-shirt. I'm actually doing well. I got divorced again, so that I don't have to worry about spousal abuse. I'm okay.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm good, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm a single man at 63, dating yoga instructors. So, you know, life is good. I know that Deitch is really jealous of me right now. He's got 12 people in the next room. I got nobody around me. I must say I break the beach policy at 7 o'clock at night. Last week I figured out that the guards leave and the police leave. So I walk on the beach every night for about an hour. I'm eating better. Yes, we're doing a lot of shows from home like we do here with BN and CBS. We're in a sad, I mean, let's face it, guys, all of us, our generation, and I'm probably the oldest of all of you, we've never been in this situation. It's, you know, as some people said, it's worse than the Second World War. I remember stories of my parents and my grandparents talking about that devastation. This is a new norm for us, all of us. And it's sad. We're looking at almost 100,000 in the U.S., deaths, Memorial Day weekend, which is also weird if you really think about it. But on the other hand, I'm grateful I'm able to see some old friends right now and talk still about the game that we love. And that's, I think, the most important thing.
Hey, Thomas, when you went to the United States, North American Soccer League, you played in there. We go back a long way with the national team. Was that your connection with Bob Leonarduzzi? Because when we were in 90, you would take us around. You took us to a Dolphin game. You always looked after us, and that was when, in the early 90s, I want to say?
Correct. Actually, I played against Bob many times, but my better friends were actually Carmen Marcantonio, and God, he's in the wine business in Toronto, Bobby Iarushi.
Yeah, Bobby Iarushi.
And those were teammates of mine in 1980 when I played with Cruyff, again, the second year in the NESL for the Washington Diplomats. And I've always, when I worked with Danny at the academy for 2 years, you know, I met Carmen and Bob on several occasions. And yes, I was always very happy to see Canadian faces because they happen to be some of my better teammates and also some great players and assistant coaches like Frank Yallop in MLS with DC United, who went on obviously to work with the Canadian national team. And people like you, Greg, I did follow, you know, the Canadian national team going back to Mexico because of my teammate Bronco Sagoda at 19 years old made that roster. So I've always followed the North American football scene quite closely, and I've got some very good friends, including you, you know, that are Canadians, and I love Toronto.
And you brought Frankie Yalop over to Major League Soccer with the Mutiny, our good buddy. I mean, he's one of my best friends. He's a fantastic individual. And then you gave him his opportunity in coaching, which he took and ran with it, didn't he? You took it. Was he at Washington with you? And then Frank got his own job. And
he took the first year in 1996, and the second year I brought him in as my assistant coach. In let me see here, that wasn't the champ. I won the title in 99 with DC United. I brought Frank on that year thereafter, stayed with me for 2 years, and then won, what, four titles with San Jose and Lennon Donovan. So, yeah, Frank Yalop, and still in the game, now as a technical director, obviously, in Fresno. Some of my best friends and people within the soccer industry are happen to be Canadian. Because you guys are close to how I grew up in the Netherlands. You know, we got the similar kind of thinking and the same kind of liberal and freedom and expressing ourselves. And you guys are big advocates of playing attacking football. Danny was the first one. You know, we talked about playing out of a 4-3-3, you know, identifying players. Identifying Danny found, what's the kid that's now a big-time player for FC's first team, Danny?
Rosario.
Yeah, Rosario, that we played against when we had our academy team playing in a semi-pro league. And we always looked at players that were proactive and are technically sound. So I'm pleased to say that we have similar philosophies in terms of our upbringing and the way we think about the world and also the way we want to play the game of football.
Hey, TR, I think what most impressed me or what baffles me more is that you still call Craig Greg. Or that you remembered the year which you brought Frank Yalop in at Washington. I mean, that's amazing to me. But like, yeah. I think what I'm starting to realize now, and it's tough as you become a coach or a person that's been involved in football in North America for, like, I've been involved in it for 13 years now. You've been involved in it plenty more years than me. Craig played in England, but he's been involved in it for a long time. Is that how quickly the changes of people recognizing you from media or recognizing you from actually being in the game? And you must have been through a big transition in that. I mean, me and Craig get asked now more about, hey, you guys are the guys off of TV. And like, no, we fucking used to play football as well. And they're like, really? Like, yeah, we used to play football. But you must have been through that transition aspect, Thomas. And now just looking at it and seeing where the MLS is now compared to when it first started, it must give you like a real good feeling and seeing how the league has blossomed and turned into this juggernaut now, which hopefully will push on. We're going for a little bit of a diverse reaction now and possibly going down to Disney to play a mini tournament. But what's your feelings on everything with the MLS at the moment?
Well, first and foremost, you're absolutely right. Trying to reinvent yourself, which we all done, you know, going from playing on a very high level that you guys did. I played on a decent level, but not as Craig and you, Danny. And then trying to, you're still involved in the game, obviously, with Toronto, but most of the other guys reinvented themselves in order to get into the business we're in right now, being analysts, being a pundit, being a talking head, whatever you want to do. And I worked hard at my craft, as I did as a coach, as I did as a player. And you're right. I get recognized now. nobody knew I ever played anyway, but I get recognized. Hey, you're the bow tie guy. You know, I'm going, yeah, that's me. And you're right. It's been very interesting to see my transformation and also of MLS. Yeah. I was there in the first year then, 1996. I remember January, a whole month, we looked at 1,000 players in a combine in Los Angeles. All of our heads were spinning because nobody had a player on their team. We picked 20 players in the draft. I threw a fucking dart at number 20 because I didn't know who it was. And it ended up being Greg Lalas. I picked Greg Lalas as number 20 by just throwing a dart at the board and going, whoever, you know, falls there, that's fine. I also remember Frank Stapleton after 2 hours saying, what the hell? And the guys that were in the U.S. and the guys like myself and Ziggy Schmidt and Bruce Arena that knew American soccer well that has followed the college game, some of the professional, semi-professional indoor and outdoor games, were the teams that were able to build a better base. And if you look at the foreign coaches in the first year, including Stapleton, they were gone out in Colorado because they just did not understand how to build a team from scratch, not knowing the talent base and making decisions on just a week, literally looking at 1,000 players. Rinus Michels ran that whole thing with Sunil Gulati, and it literally were 8 games a day, and they just kept churning out players, and then we had to pick those. And fast forward to where we are now, you know, the academy, for instance, in Toronto, you know, the facilities are being built. More and more money is spent now. MLS, obviously, now should be the number one, like in the rest of the world. You know, federations, they administer. U.S. Federation was very much involved in player development and the professional teams finally, and MLS, USL, are taking now that beacon of youth development the way it is in the rest of the world. So we've come along a long way without a doubt. I remember in 98, I was the head coach. Now we're talking about 3 years into the league. I phoned Sunil Gulati and I said, Sunil, I want to make a trade. And he said to me, Thomas, within a week, the league will fold. There's 12 teams at that time. Four owners didn't ante up. They had to pay quarterly because it was a losing venture initially, and some of the owners did not. So it was that close to folding. We all know the story of Anschutz owning 6 teams out of 12. They retracted to 10. And look at this now. We're almost at 30 teams, healthy, and it's a billionaires club with cross sports involvement. A lot of NFL owners, some NBA owners. Stan Kroenke, that owns Arsenal and owns the Colorado Rapids and also the LA Rams. It's very interesting to see. You look locally here now at Inter Miami, David Beckham, and great investments of two billionaire brothers, the Maas brothers. I'm very bullish on this league, and I think that youth development has shown to be on the right track, be it with you, Danny, at Toronto FC, be it Dallas. That was one of the first ones that gave young players a chance. It is a league now, a league where you can jump to Europe as an American player, a Canadian player. Look at Alphonso Davies. I think Alphonso Davies, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna, the guys we've seen in the Bundesliga this weekend, Josh Sargent starting at 19 for Werder Bremen. MLS is just a great springboard for U.S. and Canadian talent, but also 25-year-old Central and South American players that have used now, Alti Mouron being a great example, as a springboard to go from MLS to the rest of the world. So from a buying league, we've become a buying and somewhat of a selling league as well, which is healthy and important for the owners.
Now, how about the quality of the game over the last, you know, 20 almost 30 years now, TR? You know, you were there day one in MLS in 96. When you compare what you saw on the training field then to what you see here in 2020, how far has the game progressed from a footballing standpoint?
It has progressed in a lot of aspects. The infrastructure is better. As I said again, the stadiums are better. Practice facilities, God, I was in Boston where they were building a new practice facility. In 1996 in Tampa, I had Carlos Valderrama getting taped in the back of a Jeep when we had to go to the University of Tampa to train. We didn't have a training facility. In Boston, I had to train at Babson College, and we didn't have a designated locker room because the lacrosse team was still more important than the pro team. Fast forward to where we are right now, you look at, again, the facility, obviously, that Toronto has. Bruce Arena forcing the Crafts to upgrade as well in those areas. They're spending money in the right way. Now, on the field, I think the product has been diluted. Are there competitive games? Without a doubt. Are there good footballing teams? Without a doubt. But let me give you my starting 11 in 1999. Starting left fullback for the U.S. national team, Jeff Agus. Starting center back for the U.S. national team, Carlos Llamosa. Starting center back of the U.S. National, Eddie Pope, Marco Echeverry, Jaime Moreno, Roy Lassiter, John Harkes, Diego Sonora, who played for Boca Juniors, played right back for me. Jeff Onger and Richie Williams, you know, not the greatest names, but great. Ben Olsen as a rookie. that was one hell of a team, by the way. And similar to 96, I put that 96 team and 99 up in any team right now. Frank Kellogg, Clay Coyman, to Frankie Hayduke, to Ivan McKinley, to Martin Vasquez, to Pibe Valderrama, to Roy Lasseter, to Stevie Ralston, Rookie of the Year. I had eight guys in the All-Star game, which is remarkable. And it's hard to compare one era to another. But I think because of the expansion, in particular, the Canadian and American talent has been stretched, and you still have to use four, five, six Americans or Canadians to make up a team of a starting 11. So the games have become more competitive. I don't know if the games right now are as good as they were maybe in the first few years where we only had 12 teams.
Tio, let's rewind the clock here back to your NESL days, right? You're a kid, Dutch kid, and you're looking up and you're seeing Johan Cruyff as a teammate. I mean, just talk about what that meant to you as a footballer. I mean, you must have been starstruck at some point, I imagine.
Not at some point, all the time. I remember vividly having a pregame meal against Rochester in the Rose Bowl. We played our home games at the Rose Bowl. Cruyff arrived the day of the game, joined us late at the pregame meal after traveling. He looked fucked, introduced himself quickly. Before the game, he comes up to me and goes, "I need a smoke, let's go." So I didn't even tell him I smoked. And he looked at me again, "Are you a smoker?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, you do the following. And as soon as halftime comes, you take one of my cigarettes and a lighter, you go in the bathroom while Rinus Michels, by the way, maybe the best coach in the last century, does his halftime speech, leave it there, go out, and I go back in." Well, Sharms, I'm shitting myself. You know, I'm going, what's going on? And he comes on, plays 60 minutes, scores two unbelievable goals and waves at the 40,000 crowd in the Rose Bowl. The next day, we had practice, actually. Regen, he comes up to me, he goes, "You know what? You're not that good of a player, but we can use you. Fucking win the ball, play it to me," that's what he told me, "and stand still." I said, "Okay." that's pretty much what I did. And I loved doing it each and every day, man, to sacrifice for my hero. You're right. I had to pinch myself several times. I lived with the family in D.C. for about 6 months. Ate breakfast at the Kennedys, who lived next door.
Tell the story there, TR. That's a classic story with Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, this is also the Cruyffs. I mean, I arrived after I got traded. This is also interesting. My parents are on the way to L.A. Rinus Michels brings me in, sits me down, and says the following: "Thomas, you are not a good pro. I'm going to trade you to," and it happened to be the Washington Diplomats. I'm on a plane 3 hours later. My parents are going to L.A. trying to meet me for the first time, their 21-year-old son. I get picked up by the Cruyff family at the airport. Jordy Cruyff is like 5 years old. They said, "Stay with us for a few days and find an apartment." 6 months later, I'm still with them. After three home games, because I always went home with Johan, I didn't have a car. I made $24,000. So his wife, typical Amsterdam, she goes, "Are you fucking gay?" I go, "No." She goes, "Well, you never go out." I go, "Well, if Johan says go home, I go home. He's my, you know." She goes, "Johan, didn't you win a car last year, or scored the goal of the year?" And he went, "Yeah." She goes, "Where is it?" "I don't know." So we find the car, a new car, and they give it to me. So the next game, I'm going out. I'm hammered. It's 4 a.m. But they had two Doberman pinchers, killer dogs, because one of the reasons they left Spain, which not too many people knew, financially he was struggling, but more so his wife and the children got taken hostage in their own home while he was on a road trip. and they bought these Doberman pinschers and went to the United States. So I'm looking at the Doberman pinschers with the key in my hand. I'm going, fuck. Either they're going to bark and wake them up, or they're going to eat me alive, although I knew them quite well. So I fall asleep, and I get woken up the next day around, I don't know, 7 or 8 by a guy. He goes, are you staying with the Cruyffs? I've seen you. I said, yeah. Okay, come at breakfast. So I'm going into this huge house, eat breakfast. Johan comes in and goes, come on, we got to go to breakfast. He goes, you know who you just had breakfast with? I said, no. He said, with Ted Kennedy and his family. Ted Kennedy subsequently, a few days later, knocks on the door and goes, I know you're a lot younger, but you can come out with me every Thursday night. So Black Limo would fucking come up the driveway, pick me up. We would knock on little doors, you know, like you see in movies, to open them. Oh, Ted Kennedy. And I'm right behind Ted Kennedy, going into a life I've never seen before, by the way. And that went on for about 12 or 14 weeks, which is pretty crazy. Might have been around the same time as the secretary got killed, you know, with a car driving off whatever.
Right.
And then wow. I swim in the Rockefeller's pool. The Rockefellers were next door as well. And I got kicked out.
I mean, those NESL days, I mean, Thomas, I mean, for all the, obviously, in the end, it didn't work out from a footballing standpoint, you know, for various reasons. But from a young guy growing up, I mean, my God, what an experience that must have been. I mean, I'm quite jealous.
Well, you should be. You're right. you know, 1978, the Dutch, it was called the amateur team, we played the United States. We played the same team in San Diego, San Francisco, St. Louis, Miami, and New York. And on the way back from San Fran going to New York, I end up sitting next to Rinus Michels. And I'm in the middle seat. He's at the window. And I peer, we don't talk because he doesn't talk. He just looks at you and you go, oh, fuck, he doesn't like me or he's going to kick my ass or whatever. So I look over and I go, wow, that's beautiful. And he looks at me and goes, that's the Rocky Mountains. You like it? I go, absolutely. Fast forward 4 months later, I get a call from Rinus Michels. Just when I finished my studies, I've got a master's in physical education. And I said to my parents when I came back, I want to travel to the United States. So I get a call from the general. He goes, Thomas, you remember? We fly over the Rocky Mountains and you like it? I just became the coach of the LA Aztecs. I need one cheap Dutch player. And I would like to bring you in for $1,000 a month. You share a car with a player and an apartment. That's all she wrote. 40 plus years later, I never returned, which is Rinus Michels. And then Johan Cruyff becomes my roommate, Wim Suurbeer, who played in 2 World Cup finals, 74, 78, 4 European championships, was my roommate in the Aztecs. We used to go every night to Besties. George Best owned a bar in Redondo Beach. Got fucking hammered like 5 out of 7 days. But that was the mentality of those guys. You know that, Deitch. And Craig knows that as well. You play hard, you party hard, you know? And hey, that was, I guess, the secret to success.
It's kind of funny how, like, the English mentality transitioned over to North America in those days as well. Because in the 80s, and Craig will allude to this as well, and 90s, and even the 70s as well. The thing was, people used to train, and these footballers were seen as rock stars as well, back in the late 70s, early 80s, 80s, 90s. But the amount of drinking and alcohol consumed in those playing days by these players, I have no idea how they turn up every day or the next day to train, but then to play in a state which they were so unbelievably talented, but played with flair, like you talk about George Best, Stanley Bowles, Rodney Marsh, guys that were like big party animals, but could go out and perform at the weekend. And it's funny hearing stories from TR how it wasn't just the English guys that were like that when they transitioned to North America. It was the majority of Europeans, but South Americans and even the Americans got involved as well. I'm sure they were all involved as well too.
Yeah, an interesting, you know, what was it? Arsene Wenger a few days ago, obviously turned whatever age. He was the one that changed that culture, Danny, right? Yeah. I was a young, naive player, basically, when I came over 21. But we were forced to go to they had obviously the tailgating. Tailgating was huge in the U.S. You would drive up to the stadium. There's thousands of people barbecuing, getting hammered before the game. The game itself in the stands was a party atmosphere. You would take your date to a soccer game, and then you would go out afterwards. And you had players in the field in shorts, predominantly, not predominantly, but 50% was female audience. Dude, I got laid, unbelievable. It was great. But to make a long story short, you had to go to after-the-game parties both at home and on the road to interact with the fans. And you would literally walk out of the locker room and the assistant coach would give you 10 drink tickets. I go, fuck, this is great. You know. And I remember Seattle. We used to go to Seattle. Seattle had the best after-the-game parties because Seattle was a predominantly English team. I mean, hey, Alan Hutchinson, by the way, but not many people talk about. What a player, Deitch. And Craig, you know that as well. Technically sound. He had former national team players. Gordon Banks was here. Trevor Francis, in his heyday, was here. Vancouver, predominantly English as well. Great city to go out as well. And some of the big stars now and then loved playing in North America. That nobody, but a lot of people didn't recognize them. They love the travel. They love this enormous North America. And Greg and Danny, you know, you both have played here and abroad. The appeal for some of the big-time players then and now was still socially, family-wise, and a league that's getting better, no doubt.
I remember back in the North American Soccer League days, you know, the Whitecaps and how strong that Vancouver team was. You know, you think of Peter Beardsley was there, Groblar was there, Trevor Weimark was there. And I remember actually Trevor Weimark was at Ipswich, and he told me this story that he had no intention of going to Vancouver, but he met at the Heathrow Airport, had a meeting with the Whitecaps, and they offered him twice what he was making at Ipswich. And he was like, oh, okay, I'll be on the plane. They said the next half of this check is going to be when you arrive in Vancouver. So the money was pretty good, you know, David Harvey, you know, all these great guys. Lorimer was there, Hector, you know, just an amazing group of players. And they just loved the North American Soccer League. It was just too bad that it was so mismanaged at that time.
Right. But it's interesting, you say that, Jake, this is a great point too, is that now the fans are driving the names of clubs as well. I think early on, MLS really tried to stay away from the NESL as a failure. Don't mention it too much. Still, I think Portland or Seattle said, you know what? The fans want the Sounders, the Timbers. And all of a sudden, you see these cities that used to have, I mean, you're right, Vancouver used to draw as many or more people, guys, in the NESL. Seattle is packed 40 or 50,000 people. People are going, oh my God, look at Seattle. That happened in the late 70s, early 80s as well. So the NESL, in some ways, laid a foundation. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I think the MLS has managed it very well. Looked at, they didn't have a long-term philosophy, but also it was a little bit of a fad back then. But I'm really happy to see that some of these cities still have embraced their past and continue to do that, where I didn't see that earlier, you know, with the names that were given to teams like the Tampa Bay Mutiny, which I thought was maybe a Viking ship or whatever, and ended up being a mutant bet. You know, I'm going, mutant bet? What are these guys at Nike smoking, dude?
Tampa Bay Wizards.
Yeah, exactly. Some terrible names back then, weren't there? So, TR, tell me then, so this Dutch kid who's partying every Thursday with Ted Kennedy finds himself in America, Samoa, coaching the worst football team in the world. At what point did you realize, what the hell have I done here?
I never went in that sphere. It was life-changing for me, both on and off the field. You know, it was great, obviously, a unique opportunity and a challenge. Not too many people can say they were head coach of a team that was in a qualifying process for the World Cup. You know, I've never done that. I've been an assistant coach to Steve Sampson in 98. I coached four under-20 World Cup teams, the better one in 2007 with Josie Altidore, Freddie Adu, and Michael Bradley. Two guys, obviously, that you guys are very familiar with. But that was, to me, just such a unique challenge. Yeah, did I know much about American Samoa? No. Did I look at a map while Sunil is talking to me? Sunil goes, Thomas, you want to do me a favor? Can you maybe help him out? I'm looking at a map. I'm going, fuck, Polynesia. I've never been there. Yeah, let's go. And then I read that the worst team in the world, ranked last in FIBA. I haven't won in 2 decades, lost 31-0 to Australia. But I went there with a real open mind. And what's the difference was I embraced three things. Their religion, which wasn't easy for me because I was raised an atheist. I'm not an atheist, but I was raised an atheist. I embraced their third gender culture. They call that Fafa Fine, which is they're accepted. And that means, as I said again, third gender. I had somebody, the first female, to play in a World Cup qualifying game against Tonga, which was world news. And I kept an open mind because I knew the Palangi, they called it, the white men that were there before me, that two New Zealand coaches, an Australian coach and a German coach, did not embrace that at all. And I remember my first day there, and all the players were walking in. I got two sheets up there. One is in a 4-2-1-3 or whatever you want to call it. And the other one is at a straight 4-4-2. And I asked the players to come up and fill in their best positions within those two systems. So all of a sudden, out of the back comes this hot-looking chick, and she's putting center back down. So I go to my wife, or my ex-wife, I go, she must be the massage therapist, you know? I mean, just kidding a little bit. So I get all the passports right thereafter before we train, and her name is Johnny Salua. And everybody calls her Jaya. I understand also now that she's a player. So I go up to her in front of the group, and I ask her, I said, I see a passport, it's Johnny. And everybody calls you Jaya. You want me to call you Jaya? She said, Coach, you're the first Palangi, so the first white man that was willing to call me that. So I accepted her, which meant the whole group accepted me. And then it became a lot easier for me to be there in a paradise setting. And yeah, that's all she wrote. But for me personally, also was very spiritual experience. First time in a church, first time that I sang, first time I cried about the loss of my daughter. So for me, it was a personal rite that was special as well outside of the athletic part, which was probably my most satisfying one, even more so than winning the MLS Cup with DC United.
You had to go through quite a bit, Thomas, to get some of the players even to train, didn't you, from their leaders of their communities and things?
Interesting you say that. There's 22 tribes on that island, and the island isn't very big, and every tribe has its own rituals. I went to, very early on, I went to an American high school football game. Rugby and football is still bigger on the island. Actually, American Samoa gets more players per capita into the NFL than any other player. I see this running back, this 17-year-old running back, which is unbelievable. So I go to the president and go, I want this guy on my team. He goes, he's never played soccer. I said, I don't care. I want him on my team. He said, well, you got to talk to the tribe leaders because he's not 21. So I'm going down, you know, literally down these roads. I got a car from the Federation, and there was only 12 cars on the island with a big flatbed, which it would take players to the tuna boats at 6 a.m. in the morning so they could work. Then they would come back, I would kick their ass, and then we'd go back on the tuna boat again and kick their ass again. And just like you, they would smile. So I'm going down to ask these leaders. So I get in this hut with four adults dressed in their normal, you know, tribal outfits. And I have to drink this concoction and going, whoa, if I survive this, it'll be fine. And I had to ask them if I could get this kid. Now, this kid ends up scoring the winning goal against Tonga, never played soccer before, ends up going to the United States to a 2-year school, then a 4-year school, and is now just got traded from the Raiders to the San Francisco 49ers. What a story. Here's a kid, never played soccer, scored the winning goal against Tonga for the first time in 2 decades, and now is playing in the NFL. It's pretty cool.
Fantastic.
They should make a movie about this, TR.
they should. You're right.
Yeah. For those who haven't seen the documentary, Next Goal Wins, honestly, obviously we're biased because we work with Thomas and we know him and we've heard a lot of these stories, but it is such a great film that really it totally transcends football. So it's one of those movies that if you're big into soccer and you've got some friends who aren't really into it, or you've got a girlfriend or a boyfriend who doesn't care for the game very much, sit down and watch this movie with them and you'll pull them in, because it's
beyond football, right? It goes beyond football, like you said there, BN. I mean, I think it's on Amazon right now actually as well. But beyond the documentary, there is a motion picture coming out as well, and handsome man being cast, I think, perfectly. Michael Fassbender is playing Thomas Rongen. It's a natural fit, isn't it, TR, really?
Listen, the guy is not incognito. What is it again? X-Men? anybody that plays in Inglorious Bastards can play me, dude.
Yeah, no kidding.
Except Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt will not play you.
He was in 300 as well. So you got Inglorious Bastards, 300 and Incognito for X-Men. That's me.
So he had to really hit the gym to play you, I guess, right? You know, get a trainer and put on a few pounds of muscle to really...
and get used to smoking a pack a day.
Yeah.
But I mean, how crazy, TR, is that? I mean, your life, I mean, like we said before, I mean, my God, the stories are legendary. But I mean, tell a movie with you as the central figure, with a Hollywood A-list are playing you. Can you put that into terms? I mean, as far as, you know, no, how your life's evolved?
No, I can't. I really can't. I do more interviews right now, which, by the way, I'm told I can do because of something I signed, unfortunately. But Taika Waititi just won an Emmy. He's the producer, this guy.
Oscar.
Just came up an Oscar, sorry. And his next movie is a soccer movie. Are you kidding me? He told Disney, he said, I just did Thor, grossed almost $1 billion, by the way. I want to do this soccer movie, which he wanted to do for the longest time because he was at the Tribeca Film Festival and he saw that movie. They invited him because he's from New Zealand. He's indigenous. He knows the Polynesian culture very well. We had The Rock there. And we had Tim Cahill at the opening in New York. And I remember this guy walking up to me saying, I want to make a movie out of this. I really fast forward many years later when he calls me and tells me, in fact, he wants to make a movie. Fast forward again, and he plays Hitler in Jojo Rabbit. And this is the guy that is producing this movie, this brilliant mind that understands the Polynesian culture. And it will be very interesting to see how he is going to manipulate this movie, because he's got some dark humor in most of his movies. He's got, you know, and he calls it now a comedy drama or there's a word for that. I don't know. I can't wait. I'm excited. Elizabeth Moss is playing a role as well. She won a few Emmys. They got a Fafa Fina, one of the biggest Fafa Fina actresses, to play Jaya, for instance. And they got, you know, some guys out of that region that are very popular. So I think this movie actually will not only transcend in the real soccer world, will do well in Asia, in Polynesia, where they can relate to this movie probably. And first, having been there firsthand, it was just joyous. It was life-affirming. It's funny, actually. It's heroic. And I hope that all these things will come back and be played by brilliant actors and actresses and produced by a guy that you can't find a hotter guy right now that's making movies. I think he's doing the next, Batman or the next whatever.
Yeah, right. More importantly, TR, we could possibly see you on the Emmys stage or the Oscars stage doing a Sly Tackle impression.
That's what would that be? That would
be great. That would be, hey, man.
This film wholly worthwhile.
When we see Michael Fassbender accepting the Oscar, you know, thanking God and his family and Thomas Rongen, that'll kind of make my life, my career as well. That'd be something pretty special. Panning to you in the audience, hammered. sitting beside, I know, some A-list actress stroke yoga instructor.
It's
going to be brilliant.
That's what I'm curious to see is, like, at that level, TR, which, you know, which yoga instructor you get to bring? Is it like the most famous one with 2 million followers on Instagram? Is that going to be the side?
I've learned my lesson after two times. Believe me, they're not staying overnight. There's no waking up with anybody in the morning.
Hey, TR, listen, we're out of time. Thank you so much for this. This has been so much fun. You are definitely welcome back anytime. We could do just an entire show just in your NESL stories. But yeah, this has been great. So great to see you again, mate. And one final question for you. If you had the choice to share a TV studio with Brendan Dunlop, James Sharman, Danny Diccio, Craig Forrest, or Kaelin Kyle, who would it be?
It would be Kaelin Kyle.
Yeah, I thought you might say that.
Sorry, guys. She's funny. She's good.
Yeah, she's great.
I kind of like her. Really is.
She's brilliant. Thanks, mate. Take care.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Great to reconnect again. Let's do this again.
Absolutely, for sure.
Great seeing you, Tia.
Cheers, buddy.
Listen, boys. Let's Tia can stick around if you want, so he can go. It's up to him. But I'm running out of battery space here. Not to mention time. But listen, we mentioned how Michael Fassbender is playing TR in the movies, right? So I thought it might be fun to kind of cast actors to play ourselves in any future movie. Now, I did ask Danny and Craig this morning. I doubt they've done any research, any homework at all. I think Wonga probably has. Jeff had, but Jeff's left us. So, okay, let's go through the roundtable. Okay, Diccio. Who's playing Danny Diccio in the, the Preston North End story?
Very easy. Danny DeVito.
It's a natural, right? Really?
Natural.
Poor Danny DeVito.
Wins.
Anyone else disagree with that, or are we agreeing? Anyone else you want to throw out there?
You're going Jason Statham for sure.
Yul Brynner or Bruce Willis would work pretty well.
Yul Brynner.
Yeah. I think he's dead now, but had he been alive, right? I just think they're bald actors, right? They aren't. But Bruce Willis would play him pretty well.
Yeah.
All right. What about Craig? Who's playing you, Craig?
I don't know. Who's...
See, again, thank you for doing the homework.
Fassbender, I hope.
Could have been Michael Fassbender. That would have been my guess.
I got Charles Dance for Craig.
Charles Dance?
Yeah. Charles Dance.
Matthew McGrory, I found as well. Have you seen him? Do you know who that is? Google Matthew McGrory. I just Googled tall actors.
He's hideous. Shams, how about John Cleese?
John Cleese could be a good Craig. Yeah, you're right.
Who is that guy? Who is that guy who's in FX? Remember?
Oh, we lost Dan. Dan's gone.
Gone.
Don't know, Dan. Don't know. All right. I was thinking Dolph Lundgren or Matthew McGrory. Dunlop, it's funny, Deitch, because I actually had DeVito for Dunlop. Anyone think who could play Dunlop in the movie?
I'm trying to think for Dunlop.
Matthew McConaughey.
Maybe. After. Can you grow a thick beard as well?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know too many like A-list Portuguese actors that you could get.
Half British, half Portuguese.
Yeah. I would definitely want an actor that, you know, embodies the way I think of myself, which would be completely the opposite. So someone like Antonio Banderas, that would be who I would picture.
Yeah, you know? I can see that. For Wonga, I had Lou Diamond Phillips. Not bad.
That is not bad.
Or that guy from The Hangover. One of the two.
I see Wonga played as more of the guy who played 5-0. I see Wonga played like that.
Yeah. Jeff, I had Kiefer Sutherland because we've got the great pipes.
Yeah. Good one.
And then for me, I had, it's kind of obvious, but Denzel.
Yeah, that's actually pretty close for you.
It's not bad, right?
Yeah.
I think it works.
Deitch, do you know another Denzel? Usually when someone says that, it's just a one name, you get it, that you don't have to explain it's Denzel Washington. Do you know others?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of Denzels I know. There's a good boxer in England, Denzel, as well.
There you go.
He's known as Denzel as well.
No one is famous as Denzel Washington, so I get that.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a lot funnier when I wrote it down originally. Didn't turn out that great. disgusting. You have no imagination whatsoever. Hey, there's Wonger. Hey, Wonger. Wonger's, you know what's concerning? Wonger's recording this. He's got the worst internet connection out of all of us. It's a real problem.
It must be that new Ignite.
Yeah. It must be that. Yeah, exactly. Before we leave, listen, guys, did you see, German football, the Mönchengladbach Leverkusen game had fake cutout fans, and for charity, for like about $30, you could get your own picture of your face on the cardboard cutout and stuck in the stands. And like 13,000 fans did this. What a great idea.
Hmm. Well, they remember the old Highbury Deitch when they were making the new stand behind, and they put it was a mural.
Yeah, the clock end.
The clock end. Was it the clock end or the other? Anyway, I remember playing in front of that, and it was just a mural of faces on a big, huge wall.
Yeah,
the Highbury, just terrible.
Yeah, not quite as intimidating as the big yellow wall at Dortmund, for example.
No, it's still lost though.
I thought it was pretty cool though.
I loved it. I liked seeing it yesterday. I liked the idea of it because fans could get to obviously update a profile picture or whatever it is that they would cut out and put in their place where they sit. But if you actually looked at the kind of viewing yesterday of the game when they were actually televising the game, but behind the goal or certain sections, you could see that there was some people that had put their dad, who used to be a fan, or an ex-player that used to be like a legend at the club, and they put that profile pic in place instead because they didn't want to have their face on the screen. I thought it was a pretty cool concept, and it at least made the stadium look a little bit more busy and a little bit more. You're never going to replicate the atmosphere that fans can bring to it, but I just like them forward thinking. I think in Denmark as well, there's a new kind of policy that they've allowed where they're putting iPads close to the actual field where you can actually be close to the field, and you're basically your screen is where your seat is going to be, and they're going to introduce some sound and some fan noise as well, which I thought was a pretty cool concept as well. And players, when they score, will go over to certain cameras to celebrate in front of the cameras for all these fans. So I thought that was pretty cool as well. So at least the forward thinking.
It'd be kind of weird, though, seeing all these faces of dead people around you. It'd be kind of freaky, wouldn't it? You know, oh, God, ghosts in the stadium or something. You see, I think it wasn't in Germany, one of the broadcasters was giving you the option of feeding in artificial fan noise, and there'd be actually kind of an audio director deciding what fan noise should be at certain points of the game, which comes with a massive pressure, you think, right? But I don't know if I had the choice, I'd use that. You know, it is what it is. You know, it's not ideal. It hasn't got the atmosphere of a regular game, but to have like artificial noise, it's like canned laughter, right? In comedy shows, it doesn't work for me. I hate it.
Well, I think they're giving it the audience an option, aren't they? If you want to listen to
it. Yeah, yeah, it's your option, yeah.
So that's not a bad idea. I mean, if you want to listen to it with that, but you might as well have it as natural as you possibly can, I would say.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is the Mönchengladbach. Mönchengladbach got it right. I agree with Danny that it added a lot more. You're never going to fully replicate it, but it did visually look better than an empty Allianz Arena that we saw in the game later.
I like the concept. I like that it's a charity. It's a great way to raise money, right? It's brilliant. But as far as adding to the spectacle, I don't know if it does. I mean, I know they're not real people.
But in a different way, I think, you know, it means a lot to those Mönchengladbach fans, especially if they were able to, you know, have a moment and feel better because they put their father's picture on there. You know, I think that brought a lot to it. It you know, Mönchengladbach, the whole German game is about the fan and the atmosphere a little more so than in some other places. So I think that, you know, you're never going to replicate it fully, but in order to give people joy for a second and get it right by doing it that way, as opposed to the South Korean club, as you may have seen, FC Seoul, who wanted to put mannequins in the stands instead of someone mass-ordered sex dolls. I was hoping you'd bring that story up with TR because I wanted to hear his reaction to it.
I didn't know where that would go with TR because he's probably got his own story.
Yeah. Well, he would have told you that he should have been the purchaser because he would have got the right ones or something.
I got tons at home. You can borrow one of mine.
They all had shorts on. It wasn't like they were naked dolls.
Oh, that makes it better, Craig. Yes,
it's much better. Hey, does your sex doll have clothes on, Craig?
but going back to feeding kind of noise into the stadiums, and this I think this would be hilarious in Portugal, where they've had such troubles with VAR. If you're in charge of feeding certain noises or cheers or whatever it is into the stadium, and now VAR has been called in and you're having to rewind that noise, or you're having to go back, I think that would be hilarious. So I think they should bring it in, especially.
You know, I forget who it was writing about this, but it's interesting. You know, you guys have teammates in the past who are great on the training field, right? But can never really replicate that on the big game with the fans and the pressure for whatever reason. But you wonder, you know, with the no fans, are we going to see these players emerge with their brilliance who have come from nowhere because they are that? They're that training ground, Charlie.
It's hard to say. You know, when you get to the top end, that's not the case. I mean, they've already, you know, experienced that, and you can see whether they can handle it or not, James, really, I think.
Right.
It's not a case where somebody's going to come into the team, I wouldn't think, and shine, and then all of a sudden when the fans show up, he's going to – I don't think that that's – but it could happen, but just not at the top end, I don't think.
Who was the guy that always impressed you the most at training, Craig? Like, one guy – and I think you mentioned before, Zola doing free kicks was great when you were at Chelsea. But was he a guy, or were the other guys, Paolo Di Canio, for example?
Di Canio and Zola, and those guys, amazing. Vialli, amazing. Zola, I mean, that's what they, you know, when you think about set pieces, dead ball situations, over top of the wall, and guys that do it in game situations, that's amazing when you think, because when they're in training and Zola's got the ball, somebody's putting the ball down, he's got an artificial wall in front, and he's got Frode Grotes, the Norwegian international, in net. And he's saying that he's going to beat him 4 out of 5 times and he'll bet him on it. I think I'll take Frode on that 4 out of 5 times. But he gets his – puts that ball down, he takes that one step. And once he gets his eye in, he can put that thing anywhere. Now, in the game situation, you got a one-off and different conditions and all that. But if they get used to the conditions, he was amazing. Absolutely amazing, some of those things, what they did. And Di Canio, right out of the gates, I mean, remember, it was more – clubs weren't touching him because of his attitude, right? You know, he was – everybody loved the ability of Paolo Di Canio, but it was all the baggage he brought with it. But the first day of training, Harry standing on one side of the field, Frank Lampard, seniors on the other, and he does something like the goal he scored for West Ham back in the day against Wimbledon. And Harry's like, Frank! We got ourselves a fucking bargain. It costs $1 million, right? I mean, obviously times are different, but that was a snip at that time. It really was.
This may surprise you guys, but in co-ed league, I actually have a 100% goal scoring record in all consolation and exhibition games.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because I know when we used to work together and would do the occasional rehearsal, you just be a star, man. You just do these things with the mic that I had never seen done before. And then we went live and it's like a gong show and terrible. But I mean, I tell you, you're a great rehearsal host, that's for sure.
But going back to that, Sham, so you spoke about players now coming alive in front of no fans. It's not so much just playing in front of fans, it's playing in front of TV cameras that a lot of players started to get a little bit nervous. It was very strange to me, because there was a lot of players, especially younger players, and going back to when I was a younger player, you play without fear. You know, when you're older, you're starting to build up a lot of other things that matter off of the field, whether it be family, whether it be a mortgage, whether it be a new contract. But when you're a younger player, you're just playing for the love of the game and the sake of just, I want to be in the team next week, so I'm going to do as much as I can and play with as much freedom and trying to impress to get back into the team next week. We'll get the minutes, we'll score goals. Was. But as you start to get into that middle age bracket, and even the older age guys, some of them just froze in front of big fans if they weren't experienced in playing in front of it. But more importantly, in live TV games, there was guys that just went missing that had so much ability and talent that used to baffle them.
Yeah, I bet. I can totally believe that. I mean, it's having watched myself on camera playing in an exhibition game before, it's a great equalizer, isn't it?
Did you guys see the Raphael Honigstein article? He was speaking with a coach, and I forget if it was a Hoffenheim coach or who it was, but after that first week, he talked about the players all admitting that they were considerably exhausted, and not because they weren't fit, because they were, some of them were fitter than they had been, at least cardio-wise, but because there was less interruptions in the game, which would imply that the referee perhaps is responding to the fans, and the fans have a bigger impact on that, but that all the players across the board, and they'd asked around, it wasn't just that one club, they all felt the same, and that the actual gameplay rate was considerably higher than it is in a normal scenario when you've got a full stadium.
And I guess without being, you know, G'd on by the crowd too as well, right? I mean, even when you're knackered in the field, you've got 30,000 fans screaming at you. You're going to get moving as well, so I'm sure that's part of it. Even tired legs can feel less tired when you got your whole fans behind you. It's really interesting.
Well, the home field advantage in football is the greatest of any sport. I mean, you can talk about, I think Sports Illustrated did an article years about that. Even just the waving of things and trying to distract somebody from taking a free throw in basketball, does that make a difference or not? No, it doesn't. It makes no difference. NFL, before they brought the replay in, fumbles went something like 55% to the home team. Fumble recoveries.
Fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
It went into camera replay, it went to 50-50. So the influence of, you know, it does influence humans, and these referees are human. And in football, you imagine going in, like for us, of the national team, going into Honduras, and they're just pelting the referees left, right, and sideways. That has to influence them.
And that's interesting as well. What TR said just before we came on live about, I think in Germany, there's only been 4 home wins in the 2 weeks so far.
Yeah.
It's incredible to me.
Looking at the scores this weekend, the scores in Germany, right? Home team first, obviously, right? Yeah. This week, so Hertha beat Union Berlin 4-0. Hertha at home. Mönchengladbach home, lost 3-1 to Leverkusen. Freiburg at home, lost 1-0 to Werder Bremen. 1-1 between Paderborn and Hoffenheim. Wolfsburg home, lost 2-0 to Dortmund. Bayern won 5-2 against Eintracht Frankfurt, of course. Augsburg beat Schalke 3-0. Schalke at home. Mainz lost 5-0 to Rasenballsport Leipzig, 5-0. Mainz at home. And Köln at home lost to Fortuna Düsseldorf. I love reading out scores again. Holy shit.
Vinny Printer Sharman over here.
Yeah.
So there you go. You know, it just shows you that it plays a massive influence. Because when you think about it, why should it really make a difference whether you're home or away? The fans are not coming on the field. They're not influencing the game physically. It should be an equal. It should be the same.
It should be.
But the players are human as well as everybody else, and just that homes, that support, and what the players get from it to lift you, and then, you know, it is an incredible thing. It really.
So is the season played behind closed doors, whole season, 38 games, going to give you the true champion, the true best team?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I mean, it will over the period of time that you're playing, the 30 or 40 plus games. Because the best team wins the most games. That's it. But when you're countering in teams playing at home or away in front of their own fans, and we're not even talking tactically here as well, guys. When you have fans inside the stadium, it's very difficult to play at home because you have to appease your home fans. You have to play an offensive type of
football. Yeah.
You can't sit back. Where teams play away from home, they usually sit in a deep block and they look to counter teams. But at home, you're vilified if you play a very defensive Mourinho type of game and look to lock down in your own half and try to counter team. So there's arguments both sides here.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. But at least it was back. And June 8th is apparently when La Liga is returning.
Yep.
As for England, June 12th is still that date that everyone's talking about. But who knows? It seems Serie A have kind of taken a step back the last week, so we're not sure what's happening there. MLS, they're meeting, they're discussing. But, Deitch, you mentioned earlier, before we leave, some more details about that, a tournament you might be involved in Dallas, is it?
Well, no, there's talk in MLS that they're possibly looking to go to Orlando with the teams. I still think it's in early days, the discussions. It's good that they're trying to think about something forward thinking and getting teams playing again. But I think there's all kind of legalities with team leaving not only their state but their country as well. So you look at the three Canadian teams having to travel down to Florida. Are they going to be medically insured, the players down there? Are they going to have to quarantine when they eventually come back for another 2 weeks during the middle of a supposed season? So I think there's a lot more in favor of staying and playing home games behind closed doors than actually going down to a tournament and having to be quarantined in a resort with, what, 29 other teams with staff and having to eat in isolation as well. I think there's a lot of arguments against it still.
Yeah, we'll find out in the coming weeks. Fellas, that's a lot of fun. Anything else you want to get to before we say farewell?
If I'm coming in clearly now,
there you are, finally.
Better? There you go. That's better. First of all, I'll meet you guys down at Trinity Bellwoods in an hour. Number two, Sharms. I liked Lou Diamond Phillips. I appreciate that.
Heard that, right? Okay, good.
But I thought that it would be another black fella playing you, and it's Bill Cosby, just because.
Superb. And why would that be?
I see the Quaaludes hidden in your bed.
That's inappropriate. You shouldn't laugh about such things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, you wouldn't mind sharing a room with Lisa Bonet for a while, let me tell you.
I agreed to join you guys as long as Wonger paid for my greens fees when we go golfing. So as long as I didn't get that in writing before I did this, so maybe that's my bad.
You know what? We're gonna have to skip the 18th and play twice just for the value, Brendan.
Thanks very much, buddy.
Hold on. Is everyone? I know Craig plays golf. I know Wonger plays golf. But do you two play golf, Danny? Do you play golf?
Not well, but I do have a set of clubs. I've played a few charity tournaments, and I want to get out there.
Shams, do you play?
I played, honestly, I think my last game was that great?
We're not talking about football, Danny.
Yeah.
No, I know. I played it, you know, back in the mid-90s, I played a fair bit. I honestly have barely played since, so, but I would like to get back out there, I would.
Perfect. Let's set up. Let's have a little mini tournament where all six of us meet up. We'll go to one of Craig's famous golf courses and we'll set it up because that'll be a hilarious day seeing us three, yeah. Sean, Danny, and myself. I don't know if Jeff plays. Does Jeff play, Dan?
I don't know, but I mean, it sounds like him and Sharms and Dunny would be in the same space.
Jeff can be the beer winch.
You need a ginger delivering beer for sure.
We'll be in the same space, but 6 feet apart, okay? We're respecting social distancing and taking advantage of being able to go.
How many rounds this week, Craig?
Five.
Five? That was amazing. You're feeling pretty good, aren't you?
Taking it easy at the moment. Just the fight. Yeah.
Also, like, it's so hard to get around. Everywhere is booked up.
I bet it is, yeah.
Well, I only got fortunate that there was Wooden Sticks Golf Course out in Uxbridge who were great because 2 days before, Greg Seaman, who runs the course, and terrific guy, Thursday, Friday, they weren't opening until Saturday. But he said, you'd be doing me a favor if you come up Thursday, Friday because we want to test run what we're doing about all the COVID safety and all this at the halfway house. Right. So I said, well, I'm doing you a favor, I'm happy to help out.
You're a hero.
So I took Wonger with me twice.
You're both heroes. Look at you guys, putting yourself on the front line.
We were the ones that, you know, we were the guinea pigs. We could have got sick.
Full guinea pigs.
We might find out in 2 weeks.
Well, allow me to speak for the rest of society. Thank you. Thank you both. And I mean that with my heart. You guys are brave. You're martyrs. So I do appreciate it. All right, boys, we're out of time. We've got to go. So listen, thank you so much to Thomas Rongen. Next Goal Wings, check it out. I cannot wait for that movie to come out and see how Fassbender portrays TR. The movie should be about TR's life in general. Because that is a movie waiting to be filmed. He's got the best stories I think I've ever heard. Him and Brian Budd, very similar stories. What a legend. So thanks to TR. Dunlop, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks anytime, boys. Happy to join you.
Thanks, B.
We'll take a look for me sometime. Deech, Craig, Wonger, the absent Jeff Cole. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to Amsterdam Brewery, of course, and DeanBlundell.com. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Cheers for listening.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Oh.